This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, June 13th, 2021. And today on the program, ticket sales. Tickets are on sale for WWE events, AEW events, even CMLL. Tickets back on sale as the pandemic is, well, as fans return to live events. Meanwhile, WWE this Wednesday became a meme stock. What does it all mean? As if I know, but we'll talk about it. Showbiz Daily is officially done, but have no fear, we have you covered for all of your wrestling viewership news. Total Divas has been done for a while, and now it sounds like Total Bellas might not be renewed either. Did those reality series attract a greater female audience to WWE? We'll try to answer that to whatever extent we can today. Plus, WWE superstars are back on Cameo. Well, some of them are. All that and more. But first, joining us from my south, I have to think about this every time, my south east in South Buffalo, the one and the only comedian, ring announcer, Buffalo Blue Jays fan, Chris Culler.
Yeah, you know, just enjoying the wonderful South Buffalo. We got some beautiful lake air that we're not far behind, and my strawberries that I've been growing are ready to go, picking some fresh strawberries from my own front lawn, my edible landscape.
And I have been working, again, things were disrupted by Showbiz Daily going down, which we'll talk about more. But I've been working again on, I did some scraping of socialblade.com this week. If people are familiar with what Social Blade is, it automatically tracks YouTube views and other social media platform numbers. So that's something that I might be able to use in the future to produce reports with. I've also been using Google Data Studio, which as subscribers might recognize, the Google Trends report that was put out last week or 2 weeks ago at this point. That was a Google Data Studio product. Probably more of that to come as we are entering the era of automation here in WrestleNomics. So that's what I've been up to.
All right, I've been, it was an enjoyable weekend, not having a booking, but it gets crazy again next weekend, so.
Yes. I've been training. I've been, my resting heart rate is now under 80 beats per minute, last I checked. So, the cardio is building back up.
But you still have not allowed yourself in the ring yet, right?
I have not set foot in the ring. That has to be earned, okay? I would make people do 1,000 push-ups and walk up and down the stairs for 2 hours. I would be a hypocrite if I did not set foot in a ring for 14 months and then jumped right back in.
Yeah. I've heard some stories. Oh, man, it's a lot of cardio.
Yes. Well, what stories have you heard?
Somebody went there and he was already currently a worker, did all the cardio, and then we never saw him ever again.
Oh, that happens sometimes, yeah.
Yes.
In any event.
But you want to get right into it, Brandon?
Sure.
So we are approaching July very quickly as we are midway through June. And July means we're going to see live crowds on for Dynamite all over the country, as well as WWE Raw and SmackDown. And you have a ticket update for us on those ticket sales.
Yeah, so WWE has a lot of events out here, right? I count, by my count, they have, let's see here, 27 events, live events that are not Thunderdome events on the schedule here. AEW, not counting things that are just being rescheduled, like Milwaukee and Rochester, and I think Boston is even a rescheduling, and I'm not counting the All Out pay-per-view yet, but these are just dates through July and August that I see on their event listing on their website. I count five, just five for AEW. And those are just Wednesdays, July 7 to August 18. So there's a gap there in early August for AEW. But anyway, as we know, WWE has announced in excess of 25 dates. I think since last time we talked, they have officially announced that they're going to Las Vegas in the stadium for SummerSlam, which is going to be on a Saturday, at a pay-per-view on a Saturday for the first time other than a WrestleMania double Saturday and Sunday weekend, probably since the early 90s or something. But WWE has a number of SmackDown events, Raw events, and Super Show events, which is a euphemism for a house show. And the first event back on the road will be July 16th in Houston for a SmackDown. And that is doing pretty well. That you've got the floor and the first level gone. There's some upper level availability. Of course, in the case of WWE, these are much larger venues. These are, you know, basketball arena venues. In the case of AEW, these are smaller venues that they're running. So that'll be important to what I'm going to say here as we go through all these. Fort Worth, Texas, on the 18th, Money in the Bank, that is close to sold out. And then the next night, Dallas, that's doing well enough. We got most of the, I'm just looking at Ticketmaster and other ticket websites like Access, which is also a broadcaster for Impact, but also a ticket vendor. But that's doing okay. And most of the lower and mid-level is sold. Part of the upper bowl appears open, where there's a lot of availability for that Raw after Money in the Bank. And then they go to Cleveland for SmackDown on Friday, where the floor is gone. There's plenty of mid-level ticketing, but the upper level appears closed. And that's what we see across a lot of these events, where the floor in most cases is sold, but a lot of the upper level is still not even on sale yet. So the first house show is July 24th, a Saturday in Pittsburgh. Tons of availability there. Upper level appears to be closed. Same thing for the next night in Louisville. Then you've got Kansas City for Raw. Plenty of first level seating. The top level is closed. Then you've got SmackDown in Minneapolis, where there's some first level seating. Floor is doing well. Basically all sold. But the top level is closed. That's for a TV taping. Then you've got a weekend of house shows in Milwaukee and Michigan, where there's tons of availability and the upper level is not open. Then you go to Raw near Chicago in Rosemont. I guess that's probably the Rosemont Horizon, whatever they're calling it now, for Raw. Most of the lower level is gone, but there's availability in the top level. Then they go to Tampa for SmackDown, where there's tons of availability. The upper level is not open for Tampa in SmackDown. And then a pair of house shows Saturday and Sunday, Fort Myers, Florida, and Gainesville, Florida. The Fort Myers venue is pretty small. There's a lot of availability there. But it's doing the Gainesville event is doing better relative to the other house shows, it looks like. Then they go to Raw for Orlando, or Orlando for Raw. Tons of availability for that TV taping. Tulsa, SmackDown, tons of availability. Charlotte, house show, tons of availability. Columbia, South Carolina, another house show. Blue all over this map, which is the Ticketmaster dot to let you know that there's a ticket available here. Then San Antonio, most of the lower level is gone, but there's a lot of availability in the top level for that Raw taping in San Antonio. Phoenix SmackDown is doing better than others. The upper level is closed, though. SummerSlam tickets are not on sale yet. We're getting to August 21st in Las Vegas. That's not on sale for the stadium. And then Denver for a house show on the Sunday after the Saturday SummerSlam. Plenty of availability for the Denver house show. San Diego looks to be doing better. It's hard to tell, of course. I've heard either myself or both of myself and the AEW ticket info. We've been irking some people in the live event business by assuming that things on a seating map mean what perhaps they don't mean. So it's hard to say what this means in terms of sales. What we definitely know, though, is that the blue dots mean there's a ticket available here that is not yet sold. But anyway, San Diego doing okay for Raw. North Little Rock, Arkansas for SmackDown, August 27th. Blue all over the map. Doesn't appear that the upper level has even been open yet. We're getting to the end of the dates they've announced here, late August. August 30th, Oklahoma City. Tons of availability. The mid and the upper level do not appear to have gone on sale yet for that Raw, for a Raw taping. And for SmackDown in Jacksonville, where AEW has perhaps exhausted the market, there's blue everywhere for Jacksonville for a SmackDown taping. And then September 6th, I think that's Labor Day, Miami, Florida, Raw taping, there's blue everywhere there. So pent-up demand for live events. Everybody's really excited to get back out there and go to events. You yourself, Chris Cole, have gone to a Blue Jays game here in Buffalo.
Yes.
And before we get into AEW, before I analyze this further, I guess, or we discuss it further, what was your experience like watching the Buffalo Blue Jays play? Yes.
Real quick, I do want to talk about WWE. I've seen some of the marketing for the house shows, which I found interesting because the only two that I saw was Tampa and Orlando. But they have these big things that say WWE is coming home to Tampa Bay. And I'm like, they've been there for a year. Same thing with Orlando. Like,
well, they've virtually been there in a virtual environment, yes, but not in front of you, the WWE universe.
As far as the Blue Jays experience and all that, so the way it, when I went, it was 5,800 people could go, and I believe that game was sold out. The vaccinated section was very, very large, and there was no spacing, and you know, you didn't have to wear your mask and all that, but there was a non-vaccinated section, which looked very bare, which was interesting because if you watch the game on TV, all you see is the non-vaccinated section. It looks like there's nobody there.
Wow. Kevin Dunn did not produce this show.
No. But I mean, the lines were long because they're, you know, making sure everyone's got the, you know, the vaccination card and all that. And the tickets have to all be digital. And the way they have it too now is like, you can't, well, I guess they said it was okay, but the Blue Jays put out, like, if someone buys, like, three tickets, they have to transfer the other tickets to someone else's application, their ballpark app. So it's not like one person's getting scanned three times. They kind of want to keep track, like, all right, this person has a vaccination pass, and they have a ticket, you know.
So you had to prove that you were vaccinated. You had to show proof for
yes. That. Yeah. Which, as far as I know, you could do paper card or the app, but I just use the New York State wallet Excelsior because it's just easy. It's got a QC code on it. So
the internet tells me that Salem Field has a capacity. This is the ballpark, has a capacity of 16,600.
Yeah.
It's about the size of the Budokan.
Well, now they're raising it to 81% for the next slate of games. And the non-vaccinated section is even smaller now. Now it's just upper deck. So
they still have the bleachers there, like the crappy bleacher seats that, like, they hurt your butt to sit on.
Well, yeah, but it's the party deck. Like, okay. it's
So you're so drunk that you don't really feel it. The pain is subdued because
you got a bartender right there. Yeah.
So that's WWE. We'll go on to AEW here. So again, AEW only has, and I'm not talking about Daly's Place here, but only has six events here. So Miami, a lot of these markets, by the way, are markets that WWE is also running. Austin, they are not running, but they are running. WWE and AEW are both running Miami, Dallas, Charlotte, and Houston. Even Milwaukee, I think, is an overlapping. Yes, there is a house show in Milwaukee. Miami, there's tons of blue for Miami on July 7th, their first TV taping. There's limited upper availability for Cedar Park, Texas, the following week, July 14th. The floor is gone. There's some raised seating available in Garland, Texas, just outside of Dallas, for the following week. That's July 21st. In Charlotte, the lower level is gone, but there's plenty of availability on the top level. In Houston, the floor appears gone. There's some upper level in Houston. And the rescheduled event for Milwaukee on August 25th. I'm imagining a lot of these sales were made pre-pandemic, but the lower and the floor are gone. There's some upper level seating available.
I think too, those those Dynamites are also doubling as events. Like, I think they're doing like a Fight for Your Fallen and a 2-night Fighter Fest between two of the cities. And then one of the nights is a Fight for Fallen.
I did see that.
they're kind of marketing those events.
There were some announcements about that. So maybe, yeah. By this time, at least by what, August 18th, when does Rampage debut? Have they announced that?
AEW? I think August 18th. I want to
say. Well, that's a Wednesday.
Is that Friday? So it'd be the 20th.
Yeah. So by then, they'll be doing tapings for both events on the Wednesday, with the exception of pay-per-view weekends, at least. So I think, obviously, the dates for WWE that are not doing as well are the later dates. The sooner dates are doing better, which makes sense, and for two reasons. The first events of the tour probably have the most special atmosphere in terms of these are the first events where we're back on the road at full capacity. So those seem like a big deal. You also got a pay-per-view as part of one of the first events for WWE schedule. The events that are further down the road will not be as special in that way. And they're just not coming up as soon, so it makes sense that the demand hasn't grown yet to sell those events, to get those events closer to being sold out. All that said, it'll be interesting to see what they do after this. By the way, all these events for WWE are taking place in Q3. So we have July, August, and early September. So that'll all appear in a Q3 report, which happens late October usually. So all these events should be encapsulated, they won't be itemized, but we'll get an average and a total attendance because these are all in North America, of course. But I just have to question what they're thinking with these house shows. I guess we a little bit questioned it when these dates were announced as far as, are you still going to do house shows? And W's still going to do house shows, at least in this first run. Does it make sense to continue to do house shows? It might if the product was better. I heard, by the way, that WWE put out a number of people have received this survey that WWE has put out about their live events, where the survey is reportedly all about asking customers, you know, how they could entice people to go to the events in terms of, would you like to meet and do a meet and greet or get autographs? You know, how could we entice you to go to the events? And it just sort of I think underlines one of the central issues, I think, in WWE is that, you know, the creative isn't good and it's turned people off and it's made people less excited about going to the shows. Even if there are plenty of people who still love it, but there's quite a few people who maybe used to go or used to have interest, and their interest is diminished for a variety of reasons that I think largely have to do with the creative. And I think that's the job of a lot of people who work in WWE, the staff, is that you've got to dress up this product in some way to make it sellable, even though the core of it, the creative part of it, is ultimately controlled and designed by one man, although he has lots of people working around him, but he sets the vision and he, everyone wants to please him. So I don't know that it makes sense, especially, I don't know, rhetorically, WWE loves to talk about how we're not a wrestling company, we're a media company. Well, then why are you doing these events that you're not taping for any media? It doesn't make much sense to me. It'll be interesting to see the pictures. If you remember, even pre-pandemic, it was starting to become something that you would see on Twitter for whatever that's worth. I know Twitter doesn't mean anything if you don't want it to mean anything, but it does if you do. You were starting to see photos of that fans would take at the arena, where they would take pictures of, yep, you know, look at this section over here. There's not that many seats here. There's only a few thousand people in the arena for a SmackDown taping or for a Raw taping. So we were seeing attendance start to suffer. If you look at that Q1 average, the Q1 average was up for 2020. But I think that has to do with the kind of events that they were running. Or maybe they had to cancel a lot of the international. I don't know. But maybe there was something there. But
they were canceling house shows, too, if you remember in that period.
That sounds familiar.
Due to low ticket sales.
Yeah. That sounds familiar. Yeah.
So one thing I find interesting, too, is, I mean, the market's going to get saturated because now AEW's gone the road, WWE's on the road, and now we have announcements that Ring of Honor will have fans at UMBC. Impact's going to have fans in Nashville for Slammiversary. MLW's going to have fans in Philadelphia in July for their TV tapings. Like, so we're kind of back to full speed with other companies having fans as well. So Market's going to get really interesting.
So if these events don't do well and they go on the Q3 call and explain why these events, well, if they're asked about the attendance and the live event business, you know, I'm sure there will be a response. There's so much other competition, but you're supposed to be the ones who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of this pent up demand. Mm-hmm. People want to get back out there and go to live events. And by the way, maybe there'll be an effect to ratings. We'll talk about that later. I think when we talk about this Wall Street bets, but then you'll be able to say, well, there's so much competition and there's all these other wrestling events happening. Oh, and they're not going to mention Ring of Honor, of course, but there's other events happening and the weather, it's look how nice it is out. And nobody wants to be indoors for events. And, you know, Joe Biden gave everybody money and nobody wants to go to work, even though that has nothing to do with it. But the entertainment at home is so good. People like to stay home, as Nick Khan said. People like to stay home and they just text sometimes. That's why the ratings are down, maybe. And if people are vaccinated now, maybe they're finally being able to get to see their families. And their families could, if they both liked wrestling, go to a wrestling event. But, you know. And maybe people just aren't ready yet to go to large gatherings. Maybe there's some hesitancy there, even though some other events are doing really well. So I'm sure there will be a rollout of excuses if some excuses are needed.
All right. So you already alluded to it, and we can, if you want to lead to it, WWE coming
in. Oh, I need to say, too, before we move on, CMLL, they reopened Arena Mexico this past week, 500-seat capacity. Apparently, at least one of these shows did well. Subsequent shows, though, did not do so well, possibly related to the lack of tourism right now still in Mexico City. 2 weeks from now, they up it to 1,500 capacity. One Rob Viper on Twitter has a lot of – someone who's followed Lucha for many, many, many years has some thoughts about why. There's a lot of scalping, for one thing, outside of Arena Mexico. Unclear if maybe there's some cooperation between the scalpers and CMLL or whatever. So that's happening in Mexico. Anyway.
All right. So, yeah, WWE became a meme stock like others in the past, like AMC and BlackBerry and a few others. WWE became a meme stock on Wednesday, June 9th, where we saw the stock market price, which looks right now it is at... Well, 62, when it closed on, June 11th, it was $62.55. But at one point, we saw a huge increase. Where was the highest it was at, Brandon?
This madness topped out at the 52-week high, which sort of suggested that this was maybe algorithmically driven. This happened on, was it Wednesday, right? Yes, Wednesday, June 9th. How did I become aware of this? I woke up on Wednesday morning and I had like a DM from somebody with a link to this godforsaken Reddit, which we will read parts of this. I don't know if we should elevate these thoughts here, but we will discuss them and we will scrutinize them perhaps. I read this and you never know where it's going to go. Is this the next GameStop or AMC? Have you traded in GameStop or AMC, by the way, Gull?
I was too late to that train when it happened, but then when the next train of like BlackBerry happened, I hopped on that.
So you're doing this through Robinhood?
Yeah.
What compelled you to get interested in this? Have you messed around with the stock market at any point before this?
This year. This is my first year messing around, and it honestly, it's just being 34, looking to put some more money in the savings, and
Do you have Bitcoin?
Yes. I have Doge. Okay. Oh, no, I don't have Bit. I have Doge. I don't have Bitcoin.
You have cryptocurrency, though.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I have cryptocurrency. I do not have Bitcoin. Once again, too late on that train. I find myself like, oh, no, I had to get over my fear of like, oh, I could lose something. And now I've been slowly trading into things, into stocks and all that, which I have a lot of my inner circle of friends. They're not wrestling friends. They're just, they're really into it. So they've been, I have some
have
wrestling friends
who are
really
friends? Into it too. You have civilians who are friends.
I believe it or not. Only a few. Only a few civilian friends.
So the GameStop in particular, what compelled you, not GameStop, but the BlackBerry, which BlackBerry become a meme stock through Reddit or something?
Yeah. So my buddy told me, he's like, get it. It's either going to be a boom or busting. It's going to skyrocket, whatever. And it was started at $10 when I bought it, and it got up to $19 a stock.
So did you get out?
Or a $9 increase in a week. I still have it, but it's at like 15. Okay. So I should have sold it at 19, but it's still up in value of what it was.
So you just saw it as like, here's an opportunity to make money. There's not. Do you have like some fundamental belief in the BlackBerry business that it's undervalued?
No, not at all. It's just one of those things. My buddy says, look at it. He also told me about Beyond Meat, too, which has had a nice increase as well. But one stock of Beyond Meat is pretty expensive. So I bought like 3/4 of one or something like that, which you can do on Robinhood.
They have a high share price.
Yeah. Now, that's a cause I believe in, so I'm okay with that.
Sure, sure. I guess I don't understand any of this.
Right? I don't either.
I've been almost completely just a long-term investor in various, mostly tech companies since about 2013. I really started messing around with this in 2012. And mostly I've just held on to things for a very long time. I did spend an afternoon one day many years ago trying to understand what options are. I spent a couple of hours trying to figure that out. I did not succeed. I have not tried again to figure out what they are. I understand what shorting a stock means. It's basically a bet that the stock will go down in value. But this is where I think people, the average person that I've, you know, that you talk to about the stock market, who's not involved in the stock market, they see it as just too risky. And it's too much like gambling to them, which I disagree with. I think it doesn't take a great deal of sophistication or even a great deal of understanding of the stock market or of businesses, even though you shouldn't try to understand the businesses that you invest in. But I don't think it requires an enormous sophistication to invest somewhat wisely in the stock market. It's not like gambling to me, but this is. This just seems like arbitrary, random. You might as well go to the casino. And I guess I kind of understand where it's coming from. You hear this story when this Wall Street's bets thing is covered in more mainstream media, when they're talking about the GameStop and the AMC. Is it that much unlike how hedge fund managers go on CNBC and say things that may manipulate the market? Is it that unlike when Bill Ackman talks about how he's going to short Herbalife, which may or may not be a pyramid scheme? This is a way for the little guy to manipulate the market, by the way. Or you may see Elon Musk go on Twitter or SNL and talk about cryptocurrency, which may affect the price of cryptocurrency that he may be invested in. But yeah, so on Wednesday morning, a Reddit post appeared that may or may not necessarily be sincere. Then why don't you read some of it? By the way, all of this meme stock madness is mostly centered around the Wall Street Bets subreddit. Its bio, by the way, reads, like 4chan, found a Bloomberg terminal. And as we read on here, that seems pretty fair.
So, yeah, I'll get right to it. So on this post, they wrote, how I found WWE. Let me introduce you to my patent smell system. The acronym is reverse engineered to make sense for this ticker, and so it may seem like I was pile-drived as a child, but bear with me. It's important to put memes first, so here it goes. S is for short interest is high. M is for market cap is high. E is for extremely memeable. L is for low IV, and the other L is for low float.
By the way, do we know what IV stands for?
I do not.
It's implied volatility. Don't ask me to explain what it is, though. Okay. Do you have any idea what float means?
I think we're probably
moving on.
Yeah. I can guess. So I was quite surprised that WWE came up on my list. As I dug into it, I was expecting that the smell was from sweaty redneck chads wearing spandex, surrounded by thousands of teens in Iron Maiden t-shirts who have yet to discover deodorant. But it turns out the odor instead was the smell of bears pissing themselves.
Yes. This is an abridged version of the post, by the way. There's some other language which we will not utter here on WrestleNomics Radio, a family show, of course. Just read on. Just read on.
I mean, that wrestling stereotype's like 30 years old.
That's not even the worst of it.
All right. So under fundamentals, and he breaks down one fundamentals. This guy on Seeking Alpha and many others seems quite excited about WWE. Perhaps as children, WWE superstars provided some semblance of a father figure to them. Or perhaps they enjoy having their homoerotic fantasies fulfilled while writing about stocks. Yeah. Either way, they did all the work, so go read their stuff and you'll find WWE is solid, possibly a rock solid. For those even lazier than myself, here are the cliff notes. And this is
what, so you get an idea of the mentality here, I think, on at least this sample of this person, whoever this is from Wall Street Bots. I mean, it's an anonymous username. Someone suggested to me that, you know, not all of these posts are necessarily sincere. They may just be either directly or indirectly from someone who's involved with a hedge fund who may be wanting to distract from some other action that they're trying to capitalize on.
So here's when they broke down the fundamentals. They're effectively a monopoly in pro wrestling, which is barely growing in popularity. They make
money. Do we agree with that? Wait. Do we?
Yeah, we could.
Effectively a monopoly on pro wrestling. WWE, I mean, for all, we obviously talk about a variety of promotions, including AEW and NWE. And non-WWE promotions are taking up a greater amount of the mind share in our kind of wrestling media space, and there's tremendous interest in AEW now, especially in relation to WWE. However, yes, WWE still dominates the general mind share, I believe, and you see that manifest in Google web search data. You see that manifest in YouTube views data, which I was looking at today. More than 9% of the YouTube views that are happening among all the wrestling brands you might name off the top of your head, 90% of that is still WWE. Is the popularity of wrestling growing? Not WWE. I don't believe that the popularity of WWE is growing over the last few years. I've argued and presented data to argue that the popularity of WWE has declined over the last few years. Anyway, moving on.
All right, so moving on. They make money from media, live events, and consumer products.
Those are the names of their divisions, yes.
That's true. COVID wasn't too bad for them. It cut live events, but media revenue popped up.
COVID wasn't too bad for them. They were more profitable in the performance center era, where they're doing TV out of the performance center, because it cut costs tremendously. That's largely why media went up. When they moved to the Thunderdome, things became more expensive, even more expensive than it would have been if they were still on the road. It cut live events. Live events weren't very profitable overall. Media revenue popped up, though, also in part because they entered in the year of 2020. That was the first full year when WWE was on its new set of U.S. TV rights deals, by far the biggest TV rights deals, which were more than triple the value of the previous term. So that had a lot to do with just the contractual nature of their TV rights agreements. Anyway.
Live events are coming back and they're taking it international. I haven't seen anything of that. This will significantly boost their revenues, especially since during COVID it was zero.
So revenue is nice, but if revenue is not producing any margin for you, like live events, short of WrestleMania, aren't, then it doesn't make your company more profitable. Although you could argue that there's a marketing value, maybe other hidden values involved with running live events. We have no news that I would consider real news about international events, although WWE would love to do a large-scale international event, which is a euphemism for a Saudi Arabia event, which they will get $50 to $59 million for doing just one of them. I did see there was a weird tweet that didn't appear to be from a legitimate news publication in Arabic earlier this week that said that WWE is going to Saudi Arabia in November. Maybe, but I don't see that as a credible report at this point. No news otherwise that WWE is going to do an international tour at this point.
They have a strong social media following. This says more YouTube subs than NFL, NFL and GME combined, more IG followers than the NFL.
And by the way, there's live events too. As we just discussed, it's not clear that WWE is going to be this massive beneficiary of the pent up demand, as they say, for live events, ticket sales. The first events look like they're going to do really well. The subsequent events, very much in question. Social media following, wrestling fans, and I think we might touch on this in some ways too when we talk about Showbiz Daily. Wrestling fans are disproportionately involved with the internet. We could probably talk for a long time and speculate about why that is. But absolutely, it's true that WWE has... what WWE reports is the aggregation of all of their followers across not just their own branded accounts, but across their talent. But WWE is disproportionately engaged with on social media and on the internet. I would not dispute that.
All right. And the last thing he said, which is very interesting, lots of acquisition suitors. Yes. As he probably read some wrestling Twitter a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So we've talked plenty about this. I don't think WWE is going to sell anytime soon. I think it's a sort of dataless speculation that WWE is going to sell. I don't believe WWE ever sells in the lifetime of Vince McMahon.
All right. And then so then he broke down Catalyst and he said, I'd be kidding myself if I thought you guys cared about Catalyst or they even matter right now. But here are the two big ones anyways. And the first one he says is live events resuming. WWE will resume touring despite the revenue being missed in 2020. They managed to haul in nearly $1 billion. So the second half this year and all of next year is going to be pretty good. Not all revenues be driven up, but fan engagement and brand appeal will go up as well. WWE's IP has a ton of value. And they've leveraged it well during COVID. As live events come back and increase engagement, it should provide some synergy to everything else they sell. Pay-per-view, IP rights, merchandise, etc.
Right. So this idea that WWE will go back on the road with fans finally in attendance once again, and this will have all these downstream benefits for WWE, including TV ratings, for one thing. Yeah, I think it'll be a short-term bump to TV ratings. They'll advertise a big SmackDown. That's the first one that's back, so that'll probably be the biggest one in terms of hype. Maybe they advertise John Cena's returning to WWE for that SmackDown. I think it's July 16th. Maybe he starts a feud off with Roman Reigns there heading towards SummerSlam. That seems like a plausible thing. But I think the quality of the product is such that this company is capable of little more than short-term bursts of interest. WWE's inability to plan and execute long-term storylines is pretty weak. They misevaluate talent. The product is inauthentic in many ways. So I don't think that there's, while it will be a short-term benefit for WWE to have fans back in attendance, I don't think there'll be a long-term benefit. It's not going to be the sort of comparison that you want to make just when you talk about how, well, the NBA, their ratings were down during COVID, but that was during COVID and there weren't fans in attendance and it was at a weird scheduling time. And now we're back to the point where we are having, am I wrong here? The NBA has people in attendance now for their games?
I believe in some arenas.
Okay.
But anyway, you see what I'm saying. I just have not been, you know, but I believe in some arenas.
Yes. So, yeah, I think having fans back in attendance will be a short-term boost. But ultimately, what you need to have is stars and storylines that people care about, and WWE beyond this sort of captive fan base who will defend the product at all costs or who watch it out of habit. Voices of Wrestling, the podcast network that we happen to be a part of here, put out a question on Twitter just to ask people sort of in an open-ended, trying to be non-judgmental way, why you still watch the product. And a lot of people just said out of habit, or they're hoping that it would be good again, or that they're invested in the stars, even if the storylines aren't that great. So yeah, anyway, I said enough about that.
All right. And video games are booming. They say WWE SuperCard is Take-Two Interactive's a $52 billion company, highest grossing mobile game, and it's grossing around 23% YOY. A lot of that money will flow into WWE. WWE also sells rights to other titles as video games continue to grow. So does WWE's revenue. So yeah, WWE SuperCard apparently doing much better than I thought.
Well, okay. So the video games is reported within the licensing line. WWE did just under $1 billion in revenue last year. Their licensing line was $42 million. The video games are worth somewhat less than that then, because you've got to at least clear out action figures out of that and a number of other categories. So I think that the video game business to them is worth $10, $20, maybe even $30 million, probably less than $30. Around $20 million per year. That's not a Saudi Arabia event. It's about, you know, it's less than half of one. Video games are an important part of their business, though. And I think it does lead to a lot of discovery of as far as kids who discover wrestling through video games. There's so many anecdotes about that. But yeah, I don't see it as a massive growth area that one should, get that excited about.
And the last thing he pointed out was rumors of acquisition. About a week ago, WWE cut some talent assets. Some apparently important guy tweeted that it's likely due to them cutting costs, preparing for an acquisition. Here's Here are Reddit wrestler fans discovering this and 1,200 comments of it. Rumors aside, there's a strong case for WWE being acquired. Should McMahon decide to sell from the SA article, it's not unrealistic to suggest that WWE could one day be acquired. If McMahon indicated interest to sell the business, there would be no shortage of potential suitors, given the scarcity value of his content. Whilst Disney, Fox, and Viacom, Disney, Fox, and Viacom could be prospective interested parties, arguably the top of the list is Comcast, who may decide owning WWE may generate more value to its shareholders than perpetually leasing its content.
Yeah, I agree strongly with the idea that Comcast,
yeah,
or NBC Universal probably, which is a subsidiary of Comcast, would be the one to acquire WWE. I think it makes the most sense for them. They're the biggest customer of WWE. They're giving them probably $300 million this year and more over time because of the nature of their contracts for Raw and for Peacock W Network. So, yeah, that makes the most sense. But I think Nick Khan has said that Vince McMahon has no interest. Vince, I think W would like to have people believe that they might sell the company because that might help the stock price. But I don't think they're going to sell it. I don't think it's in Vince McMahon's personality to relinquish control during his lifetime. But it does make for a great story if you want to get engagement on social media. It does make for a great news article to put on your news site if you need people to click on your news site. And it might make for even a good Reddit post if you want your Reddit post to get updated, because it gets people very excited, this notion that WWE could sell and Vince McMahon could relinquish control. I really wonder about like the psychological reasons for that. I talk here sometimes a lot about a thing called economic justice, where maybe some people want there finally to be a consequence for the quality of the content of WWE, and maybe finally it will be that some large conglomerate business acquires WWE and they get to finally make it better, or there's some kind of a consequence. But I don't really see it that way. I don't really see it as a consequence of the quality of the content. I think I see it as like I think why it appeals to some people is that it's a way to craft a narrative or to apply some meaning to what's happening. In that, see, it's not about the quality of the storylines or the quality of the TV programs or the pay-per-views. It was all business all along, and really Vince was a genius, and now he's got multiple billions of dollars in cash from Comcast, and now he's so rich. And see, all of that whining and arguing that we did on social media for all those years really meant nothing, because it all means nothing, and we're all, you know, it's all bit money at the end of the day. I think there's some great appeal in this sort of cynical, almost nihilistic definition of the world, or being able to at least put this wrestling world that is so frustrating sometimes and sometimes makes so little sense to its fans into some sort of narrative that, oh, see, it all concluded in this, that this acquisition by one of these massive corporations that so influence our lives.
All right. So, yeah. So, any final thoughts with WWE being a meme stock? Obviously, it helped the price, and now it may live in the $60 range for a while. So,
I don't feel a great deal of confidence in talking about why the price is what it is. I think I said on Twitter, my ability to analyze the stock is limited to the actual performance of the business, and not this outrageous speculation. That maybe it's just the fact of, well, you've got some people holding the stock now because they got on board and they don't want to let go yet. So there's increased demand for the stock. Maybe it has something to do with options and calls and puts, which I could not even tell you what it means. But yeah, the stock went from before this meme stock business in the mid-high 50s, let's say $57 per share. And now it closed on Friday at 62.5. So it is up 10%. Vince McMahon is 10% more wealthy because of this. I did look it up on Wednesday, but he gained hundreds of millions of dollars in market value in his ownership of WWE because of this, for whatever that's worth.
All right, so we're going to move on to WWE and Cameo. Obviously, there's been talk throughout the year about the third parties and all that, and WWE wanting to manage that, and the person they hired to do that, they let go, and just
the team. The team.
The whole team. But here they are. The WWE has a deal with Cameo. And I just actually went on Cameo. And now, like, under a WWE superstar, will have the official WWE logo. And it'll say WWE superstar on it and everything. But, yeah, so Cameo and WWE official agreement.
Yeah. Not too much to say here, but 13 people here are back on Cameo who are WWE talent. Alexa Bliss, Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, Rhea Ripley, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Shawn Michaels, who is the top price of $750, Bianca Belair, Rey Mysterio, Nia Jax, and Charlotte Flair. The lowest price is $350. And then those prices are on Rhea Ripley, Cesaro, Sami Zayn, and Nia Jax are $350. Everybody else is between that and $750, which is Shawn Michaels. So not everybody gets back on here, and God knows what they're going to pay the talent in royalties, as far as I'm sure they'll get a percentage of their cameos.
I have seen other people. It's a lot of NXT people on here as well. Like they're flowing in, like Jackson Riker's on there for $50 and Robert Stone and a few others. So I wonder if they're just still under the radar. And they, yeah.
Yeah, you see that with pro wrestling tees too, right? There's NXT people who are still on pro wrestling tees, right?
There's some WWE people that have their indie stuff still on pro wrestling tees.
Interesting. Yeah. So, not sure how. I know people raise that sometimes. I'm not really sure how all that works out. I imagine to some extent, I'm sure it's more complicated than this. But once you go to the main roster, there seems to be more limits on what you're able to do.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, so next we'll go into Show Buzz Daily being officially done. We've talked about it for the last few weeks, and it's officially done with the Show Buzz tweeted a sad final update. In addition, with our ongoing technical issues, we've lost access to the ratings we've been able to provide for showbuzzdaily.com. Therefore, we're sorry to say the site is officially done. For those wondering, the situations were unrelated. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank our devoted, enthusiastic, and sometimes contentious readers for their support over the years. Unfortunately, we don't know of any other site that has detailed access to the ratings data, but we hope one will emerge all the best. So you've been saying, Brandon, and there it is. That's the official It's Over statement.
Yeah, they have not updated, I think, since they did the overnight ratings for primetime on May 12th, and we are recording this on June 13th, so it's been just over a month. The last line about sometimes contentious readers, I wonder to what extent, if you looked at the replies to that retweet, to that tweet, it's a lot of people who appear to be wrestling fans, either because I recognize their names or because they got something in their avatar that's wrestling related. I do wonder to what extent the traffic to Showbiz Daily was just wrestling fans. Did they know that they were just a wrestling site?
I can't see people arguing like Real World should all be Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like I can't see the those ratings arguments. Well, clearly, man, I don't know, the CNN, Tucker Carlson, he's dropping in ratings. He's going to go out of business. Like I can't see that type of only in wrestling.
And I think it's increased in the last couple of years because now we do have AEW.
Yeah.
And we had the Wednesday Night War. And now after December 2020, we had even Impact on there. And there's been an increase in wrestling programming. But I think so. I talked to someone from Nielsen earlier this week just to get an idea of would they sell media a subscription? And I was explaining to this nice person, wrestling fans you know, I was like, yeah, I do this website, trying to explain to him what I do, and to be like, yeah, this is what I specialize in. But regardless of that, there is a disproportionate interest from wrestling fans in the ratings, and I think it's just that, you know, the match results are predetermined. They're made from somebody's subjective decision about what they wanted, what story they want to tell, or what talent they see as marketable. But the things that actually do represent sort of a democratic expression of how people really feel is the business results. Those are objective and measurable. Some of them are anyway. We don't have everything that we want, but we have TV ratings, for example. And I think those are the things that wrestling fans, they want to hold on to as a verification of whether or not the decision that you saw on screen was a valid one, was defensible. And as people at me all the time, is so and so a draw? So and so is not a draw, right? You know, in any other sport, there's a scoreboard, there's a score at the end of the game. There are stats that you can look up to see who's thrown the most passing yards in the NFL last season. You can look that up. Again, the match results in wrestling are predetermined, and there's no real scoreboard. I think the closest thing we have to a real scoreboard are these business results. So, yeah, I think that's what's happening there. And, but we'll be okay. There is spoiler TV.
Yep.
Yeah. You got something?
Oh no, I didn't know if you were segueing.
I don't know what I'm doing, but let's say this, the wrestling viewership spreadsheet is staying up to date regardless. We don't need Showbiz Daily necessarily. Showbiz Daily was a tremendous service, and Showbiz Daily did give us tremendous context, which really gave me valuable insights and an ability to hopefully enhance these arguments, conversations around the wrestling ratings, especially when it came to Raw is such a consistent metric over time, because Raw has been in the same network, same time slot for many, many years here. So we can look at Raw over time and compare it to wider trends in television, which Showbiz Daily, because it published 150 cable originals every day, was a great thing to compare other programs against. Which I found that in 2019 and forward, Raw did decline worse than the average cable program. But all the wrestling-related programming, which has grown so much over the last couple of years, the variety of programs that we have to look at, not just the in-ring programs, Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Impact, NXT, maybe MLW someday, but all the other ancillary, the reality programs, which we'll talk about more in a moment, and then the documentary programs, all that stuff is in the spreadsheet and across various demographics too. Go ahead.
Which is that WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, only $5 a month on the Patreon, and you get that and so much more, including emergency broadcast and news articles and so much more. So the WrestleNomics Patreon, only $5 a month, and you get this updated spreadsheet every day. It's updated.
Yes.
We have five days a week.
We'll see. I mean, as soon as I get the data, it's going to be in there. We have Impact Wrestling ratings that I broke the other day. Nobody else has got that. That's not in Showbiz Daily. Well, it was in Showbiz Daily, but obviously Showbiz Daily hasn't been reported in a month. But the funny thing is, spoiler.tv is now showing not just the top 150, top 200. And they're not just showing cable originals in their top 200 like Showbiz Daily did. They're showing the reruns too. I think we discussed this last time. So you see the enormous ratings that reruns of The Big Bang Theory is doing on TBS. But we don't see in there, and this is ranked by P1849, just like Showbiz was, but we don't see Impact Wrestling in there, even though Impact Wrestling's P1849 should be high enough to be in there. And I think it's just another case of maybe Access not being in somebody's data set, because it wasn't in somebody's data set until December 2020, at least as far as Showbiz went. But there's no other place to get Impact Wrestling ratings. And if you find them on the news sites, that's because they got them from WrestleNomics, but go ahead.
All right. So, yeah. So, we're going to get into that viewership. We'll start with SmackDown. We'll start with Friday, June 4th SmackDown, which did, 1.884 million with a 18 to 49 of 0.51. You compare that to May 28th, which you had 1.930, but a 0.50 18 to 49. So 18.49 stronger from May 28th to June 4th. And now we actually do have some overnights from SmackDown, which looks to be 1.853 million viewers with a 0.4 18 to 49 ratings. So, I mean, that was...
Yeah, I call that difference flat from May 28th to June 4th. It's 2%, plus 2% in 18.49, minus 2% in P plus. That's flat. So. But the news sites will say, SmackDown up!
Pretty living in the same territory. Biography, which the Sunday, June 6th biography was Bret the Hitman Hart, did 643,000 overall with a 0.26 in the 18 to 49. And you compare that to the week before, which is Mick Foley, 520,000, which was 0.20 in the 18 to 49 for Biography. So, you know, a little bounce up with the finale of Biography.
So that was the last Biography.
Yes.
We've been talking offline about whether we've seen the last Hidden Treasures. Not sure.
Which we'll probably talk about in a second.
But real quick about Biography. These have declined over time, which is kind of what you'd expect. The Stone Cold one, which is the first one, did over a million in total viewers here. Bret Hart did edge out Shawn Michaels, though. Proving once again that Bret Hart is a little bit better than Shawn Michaels. Foley was the low point at 518,000. And, yeah.
Do you think the Warrior one is mostly because Dark Side was also that same week? And it was just like, oh, compare the two? Because 767,000 for Warrior. I mean, I guess he wasn't mainly popular, but I would expect Michaels and Bret Hart to outperform him.
Yeah, you're seeing these charts that I put in the notes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'll put this on Patreon for listeners. It's just a bar chart showing the viewership for all the A&E biographies and all the Dark Side episodes. And there'll be a chart in there for reality programming, too, that we'll talk about later. Maybe. It was social media chatter, so I don't know that it's easy to overrate what social media... You see this activity on social media, maybe it turns into a rating. I don't know. And maybe just the curiosity about, like, well, how are they going to handle the Warrior? Warriors, are we going to get some histrionics here, or are we going to get some honesty? I don't know.
Moving on to Most Wanted Treasures, which this week was Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Greg Valentine, who I've had the pleasure of managing against. And I say pleasure, not in the highest esteem. 526,000 overall. With a 0.23 in 18 to 49. And if you compare that to the week before, which did 460,000, 0.18, and that was the Jake the Snake Roberts episode.
So. You were a little stiff on the Dream Team, weren't you? You gotta lighten up, pal.
apparently, I was told I was a little too stiff on the neck tug.
You're trying to go into business for yourself on the Dream Team, I heard.
Yep, apparently. I don't want to be forgotten. Most Wanted Treasures. Now, this may or may not be the finale. There is a finale listed for this Sunday, which is Big Show and Mark Henry going out and seeking
no longer from with Andre our organization.
Because it's an Andre episode, maybe it will happen. And I think they'll probably, we've talked about off air that, edited for A&E HBO Andre the Giant biography that is on demand if you go on A&E's
They've already aired it on A&E at the beginning of this run. Yeah. And then we have Dark Side. Is that next?
No? I mean, do you want to get into Dark Side before we're going to Raw next?
Do Dark Side.
All right. We'll go to Dark Side. So the Dynamite Kid episode, Thursday, June 10th, did 242,000 with a 0.11 in 18.49. You compare that to the Grizzly Smith episode, pretty much very similar, 240,000 with a 0.9 in the 18 to 49. And you actually have a nice little chart of Dark Side of the Ring overall viewership since the...
I think this is the only place that you'll hear the Dynamite Kid data point as well. I don't think anybody else has that. I was surprised. I didn't realize Dark Side is really halfway through the Dark Side season. I thought, oh, they're all done. No, they're not done around the same time.
Not till September, though. We're not going to have new episodes.
So, The Ultimate Warrior episode for Darkseid was one of their least viewed episodes. Maybe people felt like they got their fill of Warrior from the A&E biography. Voice is a lower profile network than A&E, although they're probably in pretty comparable number of homes. But just to get an idea of the comparison of the audiences here, you know, Darkseid is doing 200,000-ish viewers for these episodes. And although the A&E biographies did decline over the course of seven episodes, you know, they're doing anywhere between 1,000,000 and 500,000. So substantially larger audiences here for the A&E biography versus Darkseid. But yeah, the high point, of course, so far is the first episode of the season with Pillman. And Nick Gage and Warrior were down in the 160s. So 165 for Warrior, 163 for Nick Gage. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, what I find interesting too in this overall chart, and you have all of the, you know, basically the 2.5 seasons, we'll say, the two most highest watch ones were probably the most common story to the non-wrestling fan, which is the Chris Benoit Double Murder Suicide, which did 320,000, and the Owen Hart accident, which did 349,000.
Yeah, I would say those are the two biggest news stories in the modern history of pro wrestling, in my lifetime anyway.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. So I mean, you see the Google. When I look at Google web search, like I've said before, it's always June 2007. That's the peak, and that's not for a good reason. And we don't have Google web search before 2004, but you know, and people weren't really using Google in 1999. But I imagine if there were something similar, it would be similar in May 99 for Owen.
Brandon, you got to find those Ask Jeeves search results.
Yeah, the Yahoo, the Alta Vista, maybe.
All right. CS and Dark Side of the Ring will be back in September with new original episodes, which I'm looking forward to the XBW episode just because I've covered – it's been a giant part of my life for 4 months.
I'm interested to see. Will you be a talking head? Will you be a talking head, Chris Gull?
They have not reached out to me, but Rob Black said he will be. And Rob Black has a podcast and he puts out episodes almost every day. But I just
every day.
Yeah, I just can't like I can't succumb to actually listen to it to get to the point where he maybe talks about, hey, people are talking about my company, because he has all these rants about murders in Rochester, New York, and political stuff.
So it's not a wrestling podcast.
It's everything Rob Black. He talks wrestling,
it's
but
not his, it's not his latest thoughts on Raw.
No, it's not. So, all right. Speaking of Raw, WWE Raw, Monday, June 7th, did 1.64 million with a 0.48 in 18 and 49. If you compare that to a month before with the May 17th Raw, which was 1.82 with a 0.48 in 18 and 49. So the 18 to 49, they're living in that 0.48 territory, but overall viewership dropping a little bit as, you know, we continue through the summer. So
1.64, that's pretty low. We're getting into all-time low territory here again with Raw.
And what is the all-time low for Raw?
I'm opening the spreadsheet right now. It'll take forever to tell you though, because I have to sort it. There's so much data in there for $5. Well, it's December of this past year, and I think it's just over 1.5 million, 1.5 something. Okay. Is I believe the total viewership all-time low for a single episode.
That could happen this summer.
And I wouldn't consider it like disastrous. Partially it's the nature of me is that these we expect TV ratings to be down, but that's not alone a way to dismiss what's happening. We'll see. I think it's about the trends too, and it's like, is this a gradually declining rating? What's the rank like? And we will see the rank on spoiler TV, fortunately, and they're still number 1, 2, and 3 with those 3-hour slots. When they start to fall out of that with any regularity, then sound the alarm. If other sports properties start to get low renewals, start to get concerned. But yeah, they'll probably be all right.
All right. So moving on to NXT, Tuesday, June 8th, with Poppy. Poppy was there, Brandon. Poppy means ratings, right? 606. Is Poppy a draw? 669,000 overall with a 0.19. The week before, 670,000 overall with a 0.20 and 18 of 49. So Poppy didn't make much of a difference.
Yeah. But W is a media company just like Marvel, and they have celebrities on their show, and you get to talk about those things when you do interviews and media appearances. So that's good. That's good for the brand.
Moving on to Dynamite, living in this Friday night time slot right now while the NBA playoffs continue. Friday, June 4th, 462,000 with a 0.19 and 18 of 49. And from May 28th was 530,000 with a 0.20. So I kind of expected this. You know, it's hard to have a live audience for Friday at 10 o'clock tuning in that are going to be very large. I think people were kind of like, look at the appeal the first couple weeks, but it's, as you can tell, it's dropping a little bit here. And then I'm sure we'll have, as soon as we get, you know, overnights or numbers for that, we'll have that on the Patreon spreadsheet. So for this past Fridays.
Yes. I think this again gives you an idea. You were just talking about Dynamite, right?
Yes. Yes.
You tell.
Yes.
I'm clicking around here. Sorry. We're getting an idea of where Rampage might live. Lower than this, probably, because it's not Dynamite. Although it is, you look at the quarter hours, right? You can look at the quarter hours that are in the Observer, which our friend Corey is cataloging for us in a Google Sheet that you can find the link to in the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. But probably lower than this is the Rampage place to live, which would be about half the viewership of Dynamite. It's a nice thing to say that Rampage will not be a B show. When you're doing half the viewership, how's it not?
The time slot just makes it a B show. It's after 10 o'clock on a Friday. I mean, is this generally, of course, they're going to put top talent on it, but you just know it's not going to perform like Wednesday on primetime. It just won't. Impact Wrestling. So, yeah, where most people are still scrambling for this, WrestleNomics has it. 124,000 overall for the June 10th Impact, leading into their Against All Odds pay-per-view, doing a 0.05 in 18 of 49. And we have a comparison with June 3rd, which was 140,000 with a 0.04 in the 18 to 49. So,
yeah, interesting trend here where we have, I just looked at this over the last 12 months. By the way, this is the first time we've ever seen Impact ratings since early May. And it's not a consistent pattern, but total viewership is slightly down. I believe they did their lowest average viewership for a month in May than they've ever done on Access. But P18 to 49, which is the ad demo, which if you're Turner and if you're AEW, is the only thing that matters. That's gone up, in particular since the new year, but really over the entire course of the tenure on Access, P18-49 has gone up. So I see that as a break even, if not an improvement for where they were previously. But the total viewership number is down. So I've got people in my replies on Twitter saying, I don't think this AEW relationship is working out. So whatever.
Yeah. And we'll see how much of that continues. You know, not going to give Against All Odds spoilers in case no one's watched it yet, but looks like the relationship is at least going to continue for a little bit longer as far as on-screen characters from AEW on Impact. Now we have some WWE reality TV news. The Total Bellas may not be renewed. In an interview with ETOnline.com, Bree and Nikki didn't rule out continuing to do reality TV, but expressed some concern about raising their children in front of cameras. And, you know, we have a thought here. Did Total Divas, which ran from July 23rd to December 2019, or July 2013 to December 2019, and Total Bellas, which ran from October 2016 to January 2021, coincide with greater female viewership for WWE?
Are you familiar with this talking point?
Yeah, I've heard it here and there. I haven't dived into big detail. I mean, yeah, you are building a female audience, or at least you would think you're building a female audience in other outlets, but I mean, I guess, but also most females that I know that are interested in wrestling product don't mention any of these names that the Bellas really? Or anything. They mentioned Charlotte Flair. They mentioned Becky Lynch. They mentioned Asuka, Rhea Ripley, you know.
This is a part of what I would call, well, what Dylan Hales once called the Meltzerian gospel. This is something that Dave Meltzer, known in some parts as Juno Mail, what he has said on numerous occasions. I don't have the data to really answer this question well, though. We have Showbiz Daily data, but that only goes back to April 2015. We have viewership, total viewership data going much farther back than that, but that doesn't break out men from women or anything like that. But we do have the demos going back to April 2015 and really further back than that, September 2014. But Total Divas, as you just mentioned there, debuted July 2013, right? So what I would want to answer this question is sometime before that point, July 2013, maybe a couple of years would be best, I would want to know what the male to female split was in the audience and what the female viewership was. Mainly male-female split, because that'll rule out the problems that we'll have with just the nature of the TV viewership in general going down.
I think it's just coincidence that 2013 Total Divas showed up, and that was really the beginning of the women's revolution.
I've heard other people say that, but I don't think so. In 2013-14, they're still doing 2-minute women's matches.
They're changed. 14's a change, though, because 14's Paige is on the main roster. So yes. 14, four Paige is on the main roster, and then you start to NXT gets interesting, because NXT now at that point is on the network, on the WWE network.
In 14.
So yeah, I guess 13, but in 14, it's starting to change.
Okay. But this is the data that we do have. So we have F18 to 49 for 2015 to the present. We have M18 to 49, 2015 to the present for both Raw and SmackDown. As always, SmackDown is complicated by its move across various networks and various time slots. So Raw is really the more stable time series to look at. And what we see, what I did was I just averaged those two demos for each year. For let's talk about Raw. And I said, well, what's the difference from year to year? In 2016, the female 18 to 49 audience grew 14% year over year. Meanwhile, the male 18 to 49 audience lost 6% of its viewers. So there's something there. And then the following year, we see the female audience, 1849, go down 3%. This is in 2017, while the male audience went down 11%. But then in 2018, this is the year that Ronda Rousey shows up, female audience goes down 14%. Male audience goes down only 3%. Again, this is not far enough back in time to really look at the Total Divas, Total Bellas question. But I see it as, at least with the data that I have here, I can't separate, oh, what's the Total Divas effect and what's just the calling up the four horsewomen in July 2015, which is when that happened. Well, three of the four, right? This is when Stephanie McMahon came out and invented women's wrestling, and she said, here comes Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair, who's just Charlotte at the time, and Becky Lynch. Bayley debuted a year later at the Raw after SummerSlam 2016. I was there, actually. So it's hard for me to separate what's just treating women's wrestling with greater athletic respect and what's Total Divas attracting female viewers that attracted female viewers to the core content. Hard for me to say. But there does. But I think we do. What I can say here is that 2016, maybe before that, but in 2016 and 17, female viewership over-indexed, at least among people 18 to 49. Female viewership over-indexed male viewership.
I mean, how much of it, like you said, how much of it has to do with the reality show, or how much this has to do with just making women more of a focus? But that Ronda Rousey thing does surprise me that it dropped as much as it did on that statistic.
I've argued that. I think I've ever written an article about this, which is on WrestleNomics.com. I think WWE probably missed a window for a huge increase in business by not really going all in around the year of 2016 on women's wrestling. And, you know, it's systemic of their larger creative issues, though. But anyway, because I think it would, I've argued that what most booms in business in wrestling companies have in common is that they changed the expectations of what people thought about expected in wrestling, whether that was the Attitude Era being edgy and violent and vulgar, versus the kids program that they thought it was before then, whether that was Hulk Hogan being a heel, whereas he was a, you know, eat your vitamins babyface before then, and maybe some other things. But, yeah. Total Divas and Total Bellas, by the way, somewhere around $1 million an episode, maybe a little less than that. Maybe a little more, I don't know. So if those programs, Total Divas looked to be done. That's not really news to me. Total Divas has not run a show since December 2019. So it doesn't look like they were going to be renewed anyway. But Total Bellas was still running, as far as we knew. But they haven't put out a new episode since January of this year. But not being renewed yet. Ms. and Mrs., though, still going. So that still exists. It's sort of a thing where, you know, I think these rally series in total were worth somewhere around $20 million, maybe a little more, per year to WWE. If you're not going to have those programs anymore, is there some way you can replace that revenue? These A&E biographies sort of are that. The Most Wanted Treasure is sort of that. But we'll see.
All right. So with that, it's going to put a wrap on this week. You know, a very busy week as far as stocks and ratings and all that here at WrestleNomics. I guess I'll give my final plugs. You can check me out, Chris Gullo, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. As well as, you know, RTI pod on Twitter. But then it's Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. We'll be recording, a little bit later this month. We'll be recording our last part of the XPW episode. So stay tuned for that. The Trial of Rob Black.
A great primer for the upcoming episode of Dark
Yes,
Side,
cause right? In 44 minutes, they're not going to be able to cover half, or not even half, like not even a quarter of what's the craziness was behind this. The, you know, I mean, Rob Black running for mayor, Messiah on America's Most Wanted.
So what am I saying? Dark Side of the Ring is a primer for your
podcast. Yeah, I guess so. I'd be like,
well, you're the one that's really
going to go into a little more of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to our subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics who got access to my report about Impact Wrestling viewership this week, the always updated WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. Thanks to Chris Gullo for co-hosting. And if you like this show, tell somebody about it. Maybe do a 5-star review. Their scale only goes up to 5 stars, but you'll have to settle for that. 5-star review on iTunes. Is that still something that people do? You can follow WrestleNomics across social media at WrestleNomics at WrestleNomics.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.